Poetry Discovered.
Do you hear the calling of 100,000 voices? Hear the trembling in the stone? Do you hear the angry bells ringing in the night? Do you hear the swallows when they flow?
From New York, Riverside Radio WRVR invites you to listen to Poetry Discovered, an exploration of what today's poets are saying. Tonight we hear two folk singer writers who are poets, Len Chandler and Buffy St. Marie. The preceding voices were folk singers Richard and Mimi Farinha. Richard Farinha, a talented musician, writer, and poet, was recently killed in a motorcycle accident. We dedicate this program to the late Richard Farinha.
My name is Len Chandler, and it's usually about all these songs. But it's today all about all these piles of words. You can sing them if you want to. There seems to be a thing with poets. They keep dying young. It came to my ears today like one of those hammers in the head. That another beautiful poet boy was dead. I'm talking about Dick Farina, who made it in just a little bit after Peter LaFarge. I talked to Peter LaFarge for a couple hours a day, every day, for the whole week before he died. And he started talking about wanting to be a painter again. Peter used to paint. Excuse the alliteration. But he was selling some of his paintings, and he was very excited about it. And, hey, I used to paint. And I just figured it was a different kind of painter that I wanted to be now. And thinking of Peter, I put these words together. I would be a painter most of all for Peter LaFarge. I am here again. Pock marks have obscured my dimples. I smile most now when standing on my head, or appear to, I think, best, outside up or inside down. My eyes were once bright and holy, holy eyes for looking out and looking in. My eyes were spying periscopes for peeping up and over, for looking around corners, most of mine and some of yours, without exposing my head. My neck was very short then and easy to keep in. Giraffes don't need periscopes. Wide-eyed and Boy Scout young, I stood close to the fire soon, early evening campfire heat. Wind, smoke, and cinders, narrowed eyes to slivers. First to carry wood, first to fetch the tinder, first to strike the match and fire the fire. On the inner edge of circle, staring in with eyes wide open, looking at the backs of others standing backs to fire, far from fire and ash and cinder, staring in the black of forest, caring not for log nor ember, fond of eyes and faces and the sound of their own voices. An eye with eyes unblinking, seeing only fire and ash and hearing only chorus of fire and wind and feeling only heat and tingle, and smelling only smoke of pine, and tasting only promises of potatoes wrapped in leaves and packed with mud, and touching all the secret places of fire and light and energy, and knowing nothing but guessing almost every all. Riding in the open truck, going home from summer camp, seeing still the fire consuming, log and branch and twig and tinder, as if it had seared its signal on the back of these eyes that I had used as a whetstone for the edge I still must hone to cut through my unknowing. In that open truck through woods, remembering smell and all. All between the senses sighted only as a milestone. Though I'd measured with my chronometer, each was tangled in the total. My eyes were wide and open then, seeing clearly all the edges. I was riding facing front, the west were looking back, but I knew where I had been. I was looking at the blackbird when this low limb caught my eye, flooding chest with antiseptic tears, red and feigning fire, perhaps not feigning, for some of it was consumed. I was 9 then. At 19 I got glasses. I was just the other side of 10 when first I learned how soft the edges are when things are just a little out of focus. Unfocus the billboard and the admin has no dominion. Unfocus and the razor edge is less sharp. I know it now to be the day I started going blind. I know it now to be the day I discovered it was easier not to see. I let my eyes unfocus more and more and found comfort in the haze, walking toward an almost shadow world, only really looking at what I had to. I learned to squint my ears and to unfocus words and to reduce to tempo and pitch all their meaning. I learned to love abstractions young, to squint in all my senses, to shadow dream think, to drift around soft edges, to squint my skin, to feel little, to hurt, and to heal fast. Had I held to blindness, I would have held to life. I would have been a pure musician, laying easy dot on line, in time and tempo, safe. Safe for a world of Wallaces or LBJs could see me as no real and present danger. They might even tap their heel, U.S. steel cleats and all. Don't make the tyrant tap his heel when his foot is on your neck. Had I held to blindness, I would have been a poet, surrounded by a hedge of literary illusions, and read by those few who have the biggest purse to pay and reason to find comfort in the totally obscure. But now I dare see clearly as a child, and now I even almost understand. Now I would be a painter most of all. My medium would be words and color and shape and shade and texture and smell and time and space. I would press my picture to the back of your brain, for you too have learned to squint in all your senses. So I must enter where I can and hang my pictures where you dare not even blink. There was this redhead girl standing on this 21st floor talking about witches and warlocks and all those things. And so I said, bubbling witchcraft and half-caste incantations, I saw through her attic window eyes a child in a windstorm on a fence far too fragile. Winds should all be gentle and fences strong, said the farmer, fencing his North 40 and fearing the rancher. Seeing brown cloud rise and tasting dust bowl one time frail, still light and pushed around, not wanting to be blown away. There should be no fences, called the raven nomad, going toward all uncrossed borders and dreaming of the universe. Little girl shouldn't climb fences, flap the leather maiden aunt, full of fear for Pierce of Picket, from the bed that she was born in, like an echo in a marble toilet. Let winds blow and fences fall, wheeze the sailor against the clang of weighing anchor, hoisting sail and blinking seaward, knowing no fear of fences, having never run aground nor faced a calm. And when I looked again, she had made it. A magazine called Sing Out asked me and a bunch of thousands of other folk to write some words to them about their impression, or their opinion, so-called professional opinion, about or attitudes about what was happening in the top 40 songs in the United States. They told me to send them 150 words or so. These are they, or them, or those, or them. I am a fish on a mountaintop. I shall line the eagle's nest with seaweed and learn to swim the air. I shall not perish, I shall excel. I shall listen for the sounds of the sea and wonder how long can the eagle fly without a resting place. And taking a deep breath of water from his Sea Scout canteen, he opened his fins and flew into a double dense cloud bank, suddenly feeling landsick. Emerging from the cloud, refreshed by condensation, with well-manicured scales reflecting more than light, holding a man-mer, head half fish, ass half man. Holding this man-mer in his fin pit, he sang a mountain fish version of a civil rights cloud shanty, ridiculing the processed hair around the man-mer's dorsal fin. Checked the man-mer's gills for Mountain Dew, strapped on his air mask, and swam away to his seaweed-lined eagle's nest, mumbling in his bubbles about assimilation. A revolutionary song in the top 40 is a fish on a mountaintop.
This is Buffy St. Marie. I'm going to do something tonight that I haven't ever done before. I'm going to read some of the poems that I've written over the years. I write songs, mostly, and songs are really very different from poems. They're a completely different medium. I write music, I write poems, and I write something else called songs. I'm not planning to read any of the lyrics to my songs tonight because I don't consider them poems, although some of them sound fine read without the accompanying music. I'm going to concentrate tonight just on some things that I call poems. They don't have any title. I don't publish. I feel exposed enough as a singer, and this is my first effort at being exposed as a poet. What are you going to do with this girl who's come to your door? How can you look away from her lashes? Her skin is golden across her cheekbone, and her waist is supple and has warmed to your singing. She wants you for her family. She wants your children to be your cousins. She wants your wife to be your sister. She wants your house to be her home. She wants your song to be her singing. She wants your singing to be her song. She wants to walk beside your tractor in the morning. She wants to share your evening meal. She wants your language to cross her ears and tongue. She wants to make a jacket to keep you warm. See, she looks away quickly when you touch her eyes. See her walk straight-hipped like a boy when you're around. See the way she shakes your hand when you two part. See her turn quickly on your sight of her tears. Ah, don't dwell on the days she sat beside you, how she shared your chair beside the drum, the perfume of her hair on your shoulder. She only sat so close to hear your song. She only held your hand to say goodbye. She only holds it now to say hello. She's come that distance to be your friend. Friend, what will you do with this girl who has come to your door? This is another poem. If I could have known you as a child, if I could have loved you in your mildness, if I could have reached your heart the way I need to now, fulfilled your dreams that still have not come true, if I could have stilled your lonely fears, if your hand in reaching had found mine, if your cries for love had been stopped by my kisses, would you still not love me? This is a poem that I wrote both in Cree, which is a language of the Cree Indians, and I wrote it in English, too. I don't do this very often. It's hard to do except with certain ideas, not because the English ideas are hard to interpret in Cree, but sort of the other way around. It's rather difficult to interpret Cree ideas in English. I'll read a little bit of it in Cree, and then I'll read it in English for you. Eskupega niki nutonen okche kakamotsean awo chi nepeo akamwatamut akinapit. And in English, this means, on the two shores I have searched. The one I sing of has no name, and why I sing is why the cries of a man in pain, and why I am silent is why a dead man holds his peace. His steps are gone with the color of his hair. His kiss is gone with the shape of his fingers. His life is gone with the day of his death. His boyhood will sleep in my arms no more. The brush of his hand is gone. The strength of his legs is not now, nor is his height here. His belly against my back, his toes at my feet, his cheek against my hair. None of him lives now. Nor will the breeze of his breath warm my lips. Nor will his soft speech glitter in my eyes for him to see. Sleep won't come, nor will prayer, nor will mourning, nor will my love come to me anymore. Back to the love poems. I tiptoe across your dream each night so as not to wake you, asleep in your summer, a garland of flowers, yellow and white, around your waist, while I walk these paths of ice. Ice at my feet, my hands, two hooks of steel. Ice my breast and strings of ice my hair. Snow eyes, ice nose, frozen open pout. Flakes of snow my bridal veils. I come down the soft white path, bouquets of poppies spilling from my heart. The vein of turquoise is where you've been, while I have searched the blackness nights on end. I'll come into the light and dazzle down, will feel the hardness with my knees and see you've walked the tracks of men. I say that songs and poems are different, and indeed they are. I'm going to read you a poem from which I've built two songs that are quite different in interpretation, one of them being written from the point of view of an Indian who is bitter with the way things have gone for the Indians, and the other written from the point of an Indian who was pleading for help from the non-Indian population. And this is the poem from which, now that the buffalo's gone, and my country, 'tis of thy people, you're dying, were both taken. This is the poem that I wrote originally. Now that the treaties are broken, now that we're safe behind laws, now that we're barely conspicuous, now that their peril is gone, now that the language is secret, now that the blood is well mixed with the soil, now that the seed has been scattered, now that the medicine's lost, now that the bloodlines are sprung from old men, now that our skins become red, now that the pride of the sires receives charity, now that the brave lie alone, now that the longhouses breed superstition, now that the false face is just harmless fun, now that we're colorful, noble, and proud, now that we starve in our splendor, now that our dance for survival is of a special interest to tourists, now that the music that moves me sounds foreign, so beats on unheard, now that we're leveled and like them, their customs, diseases are ours, now that my life's to be known as their heritage, now that the graves have been robbed, now that our own chosen way is a novelty, now that our crafts are imported, now that only the children remember, now that we're pitied and poor, descendants of heathens and savages, menaced to progress, forget. Face up to reality, shower and shape up, now that the buffalo's gone. I think you might find it interesting, on second thought, if I did show you what happens when I take a poem and turn it into a song. This is a song that I built using some of the ideas that were in this poem, since this poem I did not want to give to the people who hear me sing. I preferred to give them this song, which is called My Country, 'Tis of Thy People, You're Dying. The lyrics are, now that your big eyes are finally opening, now that you're wondering, how must they feel, meaning them that you've chased across America's movie screens? Now that you're wondering, how can it be real that the ones you've called colorful, noble, and proud in your school propaganda, they starve in their splendor? You ask for my comment, I simply can render, my country, 'tis of thy people, you're dying. Now that the longhouses breed superstition, you force us to send our children away to your schools where they're taught to despise their traditions, forbid them their languages, then further say that American history really began when Columbus set sail out of Europe, and stress that the nation of leeches that's conquered this land are the biggest and bravest, the boldest, the best. And yet where in your history books is the tale of the genocide basic to this country's birth? Of the preachers who lied, how the Bill of Rights failed, how a nation of patriots returned to their earth. And yet where will it tell of the Liberty Bell as it rang with a thud over Kinzawa mud, and of brave Uncle Sam in Alaska this year? My country, 'tis of thy people, you're dying. Hear how the bargain was made for the West with her shivering children in 0 degrees. Blankets for your land. So the treaties attest. Ah, well, blankets for land is a bargain indeed. And the blankets were those Uncle Sam had collected from smallpox disease dying soldiers that day, and the tribes were wiped out, and the history books censored. 100 years of your statesmen have felt it's better this way. Yet a few of the conquered have somehow survived, and their blood runs the redder, though genes have been paled, From the Grand Canyon's caverns to Craven's sad hills, the wounded, the losers, the robbed sing their tale. From Los Angeles County to upstate New York, the white nation fattens while others grow lean. Oh, the tricked and evicted, they know what I mean. My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying. The past, it just crumbled. The future just threatens. Our lifeblood shot up in your chemical tanks. And now here you come, bill of sale in your hand, and surprise in your eyes that we're lacking in thanks for the blessings of civilization you've brought us, the lessons you've taught us, the ruin you've wrought us. Can't you see what our trust in America's bought us? My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying. Now that the pride of the sires receives charity, now that we're harmless and safe behind laws, now that my life's to be known as your heritage, now that even the graves have been robbed, now that our own chosen way is a novelty, hands on our hearts, we salute you, your victory. Choke on your blue, white, and scarlet hypocrisy, pitying the blindness, for you've never seen that the eagles of war, whose wings lent you glory, they were never no more than carrion crows, pushed the wrens from their nest, stole their eggs, changed their story. The mockingbird sings it, it's all that she knows. Ah, what can I do? Say a powerless few, with a lump in your throat and a tear in your eye. Can't you see that their poverty's profiting you? My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying.
You've been listening to Folk Singers as Poets, Buffy St. Marie, preceded by Len Chandler. Miss St. Marie's poem, My Country, 'Tis of Thy People You're Dying, appears in her third Vanguard album, Little Wheel, Spin and Spin. Len Chandler recently made his recording debut with Columbia Records in an album entitled To Be a Man. This has been Poetry Discovered, a radio forum where poets can read and discuss their work and talk about the issues vital to their art. Poetry Discovered is produced and recorded by Jackie Day, Kathy Dobkin, and Cyril Peters in the studios of WRVR, the FM station of the Riverside Church in the city of New York. This program was dedicated to the late folk singer-writer Richard Farina.
And will the breezes blow the petals from your hand? And will some loving ease your pain?
This is the Eastern Educational Radio Network.